You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Coming up on Total Access, The Locker Room.
I've never cried on a football field until that moment, and because I was like, that we were robbed of a damn Super Bowl.
Early in the fourth quarter, I go to Rex, and I go, Rex, I am not going to be the one to call Archie and Olivia Manning to tell them that we've killed their son. Can we back off a little bit?
Was that a real conversation?
Oh, it was. Can we not blitz every snap? And he goes, oh, yeah, I got you, coach. And then proceeded to blitz every snap.
Welcome to NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. I'm Michael Robinson, alongside Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick. Coach, what's going on?
How are we doing, young man? We're ready to go.
We're ready to go. We're going to let you guys in on what players and coaches really talk about inside the locker room. Today, we're welcoming former NFL head coach Rex Ryan. And guys, you're in for a treat of storytelling. And we're going to find out who's more arrogant, our Brian Billick or Coach Rex Ryan.
Yeah, I'm going to have an opinion on that. And we're also going to hear about how Rex Ryan almost killed Eli Manning.
Woo, my damn pants falling down. Watch out, watch out. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
That's ours. Yeah, baby. Hey, time out. Time out.
I know.
I can't hear you.
That's a long sprint for me. I got to get my damn track shoes on.
Oh, I don't like it. Love it.
As soon as you look in here, they're going to know you're coming.
Okay. All right. Yep, periff that bad boy.
He can be the best rush, best big end. He's got the body for everything.
Why don't you just step up and block Mario real quick?
We got a hell of a group here, man.
And guys, here he is, the one and only Rex Ryan. I mean, one of my favorite personalities in the National Football League. Coach Ryan, welcome to the Total Access Podcast Show, man.
Oh, I'm fired up, man. And you got one of my mentors, the legend Brian Billick.
I don't know about that. You're just making me feel old now.
No, I tell you what. And it's so funny because everybody, like, you know, who's one of your mentors? And for me, of course, my dad was the biggest mentor, but Brian was a huge mentor. Everything I did as a head coach, I stole from this man from an organizational standpoint. Every bit of it, from our practice schedules and everything else. And I felt I was ready to go because of him. There's nobody that had better organizational skills than Brian Billick. And obviously, I never quite had the offensive mind that Brian had.
Obviously, I didn't either, though.
I learned so much from Brian.
Well, I appreciate that. Coach Brian, we always have a locker room story, you know what I mean, to start our show off. You can include Coach Billick if you'd like, you know what I'm saying?
I don't know about that.
Look, man, these ain't stories we tell on TV, on NFL Network or ESPN, right. Okay? These are the back, behind-the-scenes stories. So let's hear yours.
Oh, I got a good one. I got a good one here. So right now I'm at Jackson State with one of Brian and I's, you know, sons right there, man. Deion Sanders, the head coach here at Jackson State. Dennis Thurman's the defensive coordinator here. So I'm at Jackson State. So let me tell you about one of the Jackson State's the best player that in the history of the National Football League, Walter Payton.
Oh, okay.
All right. What was Walter Payton like in the locker room? All right. I'm going to tell you. We all know, the fans all know that Walter Payton, one of the most intense guys ever, the workout warrior. But my gosh, there was another side of Walter Payton. So what he would do, I'll give you an example. He brought in a tray of donuts, okay, all plain donuts. And I'm looking over there. What's he doing? And I look, he's got the stuff. Remember you used to put on your ankles, they had that pink stuff. You'd put it on there. You'd slab it on the back of your ankles and, all that.
Oh, no.
He stole it from the church. Oh, yeah, Brian. He would go in individually. He's taking the donut and he's going like – putting it on there on the top, putting it on the tray, everyone, and he'd just hang out there. Then he'd sit in his locker and he'd wait for them.
Oh my gosh.
Because you couldn't resist. You look at that, that looked pretty good. Oh my god. That was Walter Payton, and it, man, it would, there was a million of those type of things that he would do, but he was hilarious. And
that's amazing.
One example of Walter Payton. Oh,
that's just not, as a donut connoisseur, that's just not right. That's crossing the line that ought not to be crossed.
But you know you're going to take it.
One at least. It would have taken me two or three before I realized how bad it was.
Yeah, that can't be right.
Let me try another one. Hey, I got this is one I've been wanting to ask this for a while, because I told the guys about it. Do you remember the first time you and I met?
Oh, I remember. We did, Brian. Remember, we would do those coaching clinics. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and sure enough, we went all over the darn place, and I don't remember exactly where the first time we met, but I remember we used to do those things.
You remember this one? It's in Montreal, of all places. And they had contract, and you and I didn't know each other. So, you know, we came at this separately, and you were going to go on before me, and they were going to have 1,000 coaches there.
Right.
Well, so I want to hear Rex Ryan, you know, because your dad and Doug Scoville and knew you and Rob, and when you're younger. And so I go, this is great. I get to go hear Rex Ryan speak. I come down there. There are like 5 guys in there. I mean, remember that? There was nobody there. But you're up there. You were coaching your ass off. Like, the room was filled. And I thought, now that's a guy, if I ever get a chance, that guy needs to work with me, because it doesn't matter whether there's 5 guys or 5,000 guys. He's just coaching some ball.
Yeah, no, it's the truth. Because remember, we did that one in Angelo, too.
Oh, yeah.
Those were Angelo, there was like 2,000 coaches literally in the room. But you know what it is? Like, and isn't it funny? Because I never knew Brian at the time, but you're right. But that's just you and I. That's just who we are. Like, we love the game. And whether it's, you know, 5 people, 2,000 people, you're exactly right, Brian. That's who we were. And really, that's who we, you know, I mean, to this day, that's who I am still. I had my twin brother who's now coaching with Baltimore, ironically. Rob's coaching the linebackers there. And my son is in there. We're going over things like, okay, well, what would you do to this coverage? What would you do to this coverage? And I was looking like, damn, my son's pretty good. He's winning on the last thing. But there's a lot of things I'm not very good at. But one thing I grew up with, for whatever reason, you know, I'm dyslexic, a lot of different things that were challenging in life. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, football, it came easy to me, and it was something that to this day I have a huge passion for this game. And Brian, that's exactly right. That was the first time we met.
You were coaching up, man.
But I tell people that, you know, did you know Brian Billick? I go, no. I said, the funny thing is that it told you how Brian wanted. He wanted some of his coaches to have that kind of passion, and that's what we did. And when you look at the group that Brian put together, man, we had one hell of a group. But it's a credit to Brian going finding out coaches and bringing that staff together and knowing that they would be good together. It's a real credit to Brian.
Now, both of you coaches and Coach Billick, before we got started, I told Coach Rex Ryan, like, dude, you're one of my favorite personalities to ever be in the National Football League, because he told it like it is. He told it like players would say it to each other, right? When you look at coaches, how the hell are coach talking like that? Well, Coach Ryan did that, right? And obviously, you know, you were mic'd up throughout Hard Knocks and all of those types of things, right? I.e. go get a snack and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
24. Boom. 24.
Hit. Woo! I made breakfast every day. I cook bacon on the grill.
Oh, really?
Bacon and sausage.
Oh, that's good.
Make the eggs and biscuits inside. That kind of.
Oh, there you go.
We're turning the clock back a few years. Yep. Oh, that's too funny.
Got your hat, bro.
Yeah, I mean, blue. Ooh.
Hey, how's everything?
Pretty good.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and the Blakeshire was happy, though. He goes, oh, boy, oh, he gets after it.
Crack toss, babe. Look at Williams Sr. now.
Yeah. He's one of the best kids around, too.
Good. Are you all right? You gash a little? Are you okay?
Good.
Oh, yeah. All right, Cassius.
Whoopsie. Somebody said Peter Man. Somebody said Peterman. I don't know who it was.
We literally had, I think, 12 players on defense, and that was it.
Oh, my God. Their tongues were dragging.
But he was so pissed from the year before. He lit us up for a zillion points, you know what I mean?
Area, area.
Watch the press out by Y.
Hey, old trick to the trade there, Richie. Nice job.
Do you think in today's environment, right, with today's climate, and we all know what I'm talking about with how sensitive people are in locker rooms and stuff now, do you think you would change anything about how you coached, you know, just based off today's climate in the locker room?
Well, I'm going to say this. There's and you know the way I think you can respect this, mm-hmm. that the only way I could ever be successful is being myself. I can't go out. As much as I admire Brian, I couldn't go out and try to be Brian Billick. I couldn't try to be Buddy Ryan. I'm just Rex Ryan, and this is who I am. And I'll say this, and I understand there's a different climate out there, but the players, if they know you care, they're going to accept you for all the faults and everything else. I had guys like, oh, God, oh, please don't cuss. Yeah, sorry about that. You know, whatever. They know I love them, but they know it's genuine from the heart. But that would be it. And I've had the fortune 2 years in a row of coaching the Hula Bowl. So I've taken some guys and had it. And I still believe the guys are the same. Guys love this game. And it's still the same. And I just love being around it, being part of it. I'm here with Jackson State. I love it. Yeah. I can't help it. I teach. I do whatever. And I said, Prime, I apologize if some, you know, cuss words came out, but it's for emphasis only. You know,
that's right.
But I don't know. They kind of fly out. But
you have to get to
hurt myself, Imrob. I have to be myself.
It's like Patton said, if you don't make it profane, they're not going to remember it. So
that's true. That's
true. We talk about this all the time, too, that I don't know that people, and it's not fair, and I'm not trying to make an excuse for it. The locker room is a different environment. And those that have never been in it,
don't
understand that the communication and the way you interact with one another is different, and it's not meant to be disrespectful. And are there times you cross the line? I always ask this because of our styles, and we're talking about kind of big personality. At the end of the day, who's more arrogant, you or me?
Great question. Well, you know what? I got to say this, and this is the honest to goodness truth. There was no question that did I believe I was. Oh, hell no. I knew I was the best.
Oh, sure.
You know, well, so did Brian Billick. Trust
right
me
right.
on this.
Wow.
And that's the thing. Like, if we don't believe in ourselves, who the hell
exactly
is going
right.
to follow us?
Exactly.
And
right.
so
true.
I think we are both arrogant. I don't think there's anything, you know, there. That's absolutely the truth. However, we have to be. That's who we are. And by gosh, it's the truth. I've got to give you a great story about Brian as a coach.
Okay.
He makes a change at offensive coordinator halfway through the season. And we're playing New Orleans. Sean Payton, you got Drew Brees. I mean, they had a hell of a football team. And I think we had like five takeaways in that game. But the most impressive thing wasn't the defense. We scored twice. But anyway, it wasn't the defense. I think we had close to 30 first downs at halftime.
At halftime?
I'm not kidding.
You're lying.
It's the damnedest thing. We got to look it up. I'm just telling you, Brian put up like 500 yards, maybe at half. We all looked at each other like, damn, Brian, why didn't you?
Where the hell you been?
Where you been at?
We were like, holy cow. And really what Brian did, the genius of a coach, in my opinion, is taking what his players do.
There you go.
And saying, all right, this is what he does. We had Steve McNair quarterback. I'll be dang if we didn't come up. All of a sudden now we're in double tight ends. We're doing those things that were great for Air McNair.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, dang. And we went that year, we won 14 or 13 games in regular season, And we were whooping asses. 2006, I'll never forget it, because I really thought we were going to win the Super Bowl that year. I really did. I know we led the NFL in more categories in defense than any defense in the history of the game. But it was that team, and I'm like, we're going to do it. We got McNair at quarterback. We're tough as hell at that position. And we're going to play with this defense. I mean, it was a team thing. But we ran into Peyton Manning, and we turned it over four times, I think, like that.
Down in the red zone, yeah.
Remember that? And they kicked five field goals on us.
Right.
They never scored. Wow. We lost. They scored 15 points with Peyton Manning in his prime. But we turned it over, and it was uncharacteristic of our offense. You know, we had guys, Todd Heap fumbled. We had some big mistakes. And I'll never forget, I've never cried on a football field until that moment. And because I was like, that we were robbed of a damn Super Bowl. Like, that team was so good. But I think the effect of that game had an effect on us the next season.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that?
It did. We knew how good we were. But it kind of had an effect to where it's like, damn, we gave it up. And we were kind of in a funk. And I'm going to tell you this. The year they fired Brian, I came back. I sat in there. John Harbaugh gets the job. I was there. I was a leftover coach. I said immediately that this team's a hell of a lot closer to damn 13-3 than it is whatever the other was. And it's the truth. We just had a funk. We had one season where Brian Billick is still the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens. I believe that to my heart.
But that's the NFL, right? I mean, it goes part and parcel, you know, short. I told the guys I want to get one more story in here because I love these stories. You told a story about me. I got to tell a story about
get them coach. Get them coach.
Remember, Eli Manning comes into Baltimore. Kurt Warner was still starting for the Giants.
Right.
But Eli was going to play. So they put in and Rex is calling it and we're killing him. And so they put Eli in. Well, it was tough. It was tough to watch.
Why
and
you doing like that, Coach Ryan?
So I go to Rex. We're about the early of the fourth quarter. I go to Rex and I go, Rex, I am not going to be the one to call Archie and Olivia Manning to tell them that we've killed their son. Can we back off a little bit?
Was that a real conversation?
Oh, it was. Can we not blitz every snap? And he goes, oh, yeah, I got you, coach. And then proceeded to blitz every snap. that was what, right? You remember that.
That's the whole thing about you know, don't ask for permission. Ask for forgiveness later. They would have looked at me like, where's this coming from? But you know what's funny? Remember, Brian, we did that in that New Orleans game. We were kicking just destroying them. And I'm like, and Brian never said anything. I'll just back off, play traditional coverage. Drew Brees went for 200 passing yards in the fourth quarter alone. But we still killed them.
Yeah.
But in the fourth quarter alone, he threw for 200 yards against us. And I'll never forget it. They get down. They're going to go for a two-point play. We only had one call on a two-point call, and I never even called it. I was so pissed. How did I do this to myself? And so since that time, no way I went back to what we said when I was – first coaching with Brian's like, come on. But that story is true, though, that Brian's talking about. He literally said that to me during the game.
Coach Ryan, I mean, I'm seeing you light up as you talk about these stories, man. I mean, why in the hell aren't you coaching? Do you still get the urge, man? I mean, you're down there helping Prime. We're talking about you at the Hula Bowl. You're talking about how great of a teacher you are. Come on, man. What's up? You know what I mean?
You know, for some reason, I don't know if those guys just don't have my number anymore. I'm gaining more weight back. You know, Prime never worked, never won, never did anything. When I was heavy, man, we were kicking ass. Yeah. Went back to gaining weight. But,
there you go.
I don't know. It's just, it's one of those things. I really enjoy what I do. I got a great team, you know, with Sam Ponder, Randy Moss, Teddy Bruschi, Matthew Hasselbeck. I love it. It's a great team. But if I never had that, I'd go crazy. You know, I get my football fix. We mentioned my son's coaching now with Detroit. So I get my fix there and with my brother coaching. But, yeah, I'll be honest. It's I miss it. You know, I miss it every day. You know, nobody's.
Well, there's a lot of guys. People have to understand, once you've become a head coach, for a lot of guys, it is hard to go back. Because it can be a little bit, I'll be honest with myself, a little bit of it is, been there, done that. You know, once you've been to this position. But Rex is genuine. People are missing out because for a fact, Rex would bring the passion to the coordinator's job.
Yeah.
That a lot of guys who became head coach, then come back and coordinate, but they really got their eye on being a head coach again and do all just coaching ball.
That's my thing. Is it tough? You were a head coach. I mean, does it feel like would it feel like a demotion? I mean, like, is it an ego thing? How does that thing work?
Well, it's probably all of the above. I'm certainly, it'd probably be ego. Like, I want to do it for most guys. Mm-hmm. If there were a few, like if Brian said, I'm going to be a head coach again, I'd go right back with Brian.
I got you.
I would go with people I would respect. I absolutely would do it, but only those people. I'm not just going to jump in there and some, you know, snot-nosed kid or whatever is going to be a head coach.
Right.
I don't need to do it. I've made enough money in life. I don't need to do it. And as much as I love it, I love what I'm doing now also. So to me, unless it's absolutely the right situation with the right leader, I mean, that'd be the only way I would possibly go back as a coordinator.
Along those lines, the coaches today, the younger coaches, they're looking obviously for a different type right now. And they all seem to be out of the same mode. It's different than with you and I. Give us some observations you think about the way the coaching selections are being made right now.
Yeah, it's a little different. I think it's just it's like a trend. Somebody had success hiring a young guy, and so now they're all going to look for it. So you look at McVay with the Rams, and then you look at LaFleur at Green Bay. But you got to realize, like, LaFleur, to me, and nothing against him personally, did fire a friend of mine. So
both of us.
To me, that dude's already on third base, and he thinks he hit a triple. Like, no way in hell. Give me Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers.
For just a game.
Nobody wins the weekend. But in all fairness, like, some of these guys are really sharp. Like, I was shocked even just spending this past weekend with my son. They know their stuff now. And I think what happens, everybody's patterning themselves off of each other. They'll see what's working.
Yeah.
Here's a two-beater. Here's a four-beater. Here's a three-beater. Here's a this. Here's a that. The difference is these defenses are allowing it to happen. They line up. They know what you're in. You're two high safeties. I'm either playing cover two, six, or four. Boom.
Yeah.
And now they're looking for those things. The defenses are not creative as much as they used to be back, you know, in the past when you had a Buddy Ryan on the sideline, a Bill Belichick, a whoever. It's not quite is challenging, in my opinion, as it used to be when you had some of these really good coaches out there on defense.
You know, you bring up Sean McVay, and it's something else I wanted to ask you was, I worked with Sean's grandfather, John McVay, when I was in San Francisco. Great guy. Yeah. Just a ball coach. You know, was at Dayton and grew up in the profession, was just a ball coach. And I remember, and John was a mentor for me back when I was with San Francisco. And it applies because you coached in New York. Coaching's coaching. NFL is tough, but New York is a whole nother level. And I remember John McVay told me, who was just a career coach. He said, Brian, coaching in New York sucked the coaching life out of me. Talk a little bit about the pressure, the uniqueness of being a head coach in New York and the difficulty of that.
Yeah, Brian, it's a great question because and I think there's actually even a difference between coaching the Jets and coaching the Giants. Mm-hmm. The Giants is more old school, and they kind of treat a little more forgiving that way, where the Jets is a little different. But I went in there. It never bothered me a bit. My dad was a coach with the Jets for 8 years in his career. Super Bowl III was his first year, actually. And so to me, a lot of coaches, you're right. If you ain't ready to go to New York, don't you dare take that job. Adam Gase, a great example. Adam Gase, a good football coach.
Yeah.
And Adam Gase in New York, Adam Gase failed at the initial press conference and could never get it back. The fan base is like, that ain't my coach. You know, his eyes are crazy. I don't like him. And it's weird. It's just different. You know, the media times, like I thought I was ready being a coordinator and growing up around the game. And the first press conference I go to, there's 200 dang people in there. And I'm like, I'm looking around for the bullshit, you know, but I knew the fan base. I knew what they wanted. So I could relate to the fan base. I grew up a Jet fan. And so I never had a problem with it. Like, to me, I was like, I embraced it. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I embraced it. And you can't BS them. If you BS them, they'll eat you up and run your butt out of town.
But see, that's it, Rex. You have a no BS personality, so you were perfect for that type of fit, right? I was with Robert Saleh in Seattle. Okay, he's also has that kind of a personality. He's not as his personality isn't as out there as yours was. But if you had some advice to give to him, what advice would you give to Robert Saleh handling this New York team and this New York media?
Well, I think he's done a good job to begin with, but I think the big one is, like, he has to be himself. He can't go out and try to be somebody else because they will see through you. Mm-hmm. They will absolutely see through you. And the other thing is, man, embrace the situation that you got. I thought it was as good, as great a place as you can have. Number one, I'll tell you this, their facilities, second to none.
Yeah.
And I remember I get interviewed for the Jet job, and I'm like, hey, by the way, Woody, he hired me. I go, by the way, next time you interview a head coach, which I hope doesn't happen for a long time, you might want to let him see these facilities. Because he'll be there. I have no idea. And I'm like, wow, these are unbelievable. But just embrace the job you have, the passion, and include those fans, man. And don't BS them. Tell them the truth straight up. And here's the great thing. Those writers – feel like, oh, man, those guys are hard. If you stink, they are going to tell you you stink. You know, if your team plays bad, guess what? You're going to get hammered. Face it, man. You know, and just be a part of it and understand. The fans love toughness, commitment. That's what they're all about, and effort. You give them and passion. You give them those things, you'll do just fine. If you give them anything less, those fans are going to be all over and they'll turn on him.
Mm. Yeah, and I think he's got an advantage too in that he's his general manager, someone we're very familiar with, Joe Douglas. Yep. And as we know, he's just a grinder. Yes, he's just going to grind the film. You know, because I've always said it's kind of become a general manager's league. And that's not good or bad. It just is. But that relationship with the general manager, and Rex, you know what I'm talking about. Whoa. That has to be solid. Doesn't mean you agree on everything. Doesn't mean you don't argue and scrimmage and dog cuss mm-hmm. each other occasionally. But you've got to have that shared vision. And if you don't, particularly in a place like New York, all of a sudden, that's just not going to work.
No, not at all.
Yeah, and that's true. And like, Brian, you think of how blessed we were in Baltimore when you had Ozzie Newsome and a guy that literally – not a Hall of Fame player, but he's a Hall of Fame GM too.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons a Hall of Fame GM, because he works side by side with his coach. He knows what you want. I thought they did an amazing job of that. He knows what the coach wants. So he knows what it looks like. Mm-hmm. And that's what he goes and pursues. What's important to Brian might be different than what's important to John Harbaugh, but he's going to go out and try to get the players that that person wants. And that's what I think people are missing. I always love this one. We'll draft him, you coach him. Well, that's the team that's going to stink. I saw it firsthand in Buffalo. I know exactly what that is. I'm like, dude, we're a team.
What yeah, you got to talk. Understand?
If you can't be a team with the scouting department and the coaching staff, what do you think your team's going to look like on the field? Like that is, to me, the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. I'm not going to share what Brian thought of some scouting. When we grew up, we knew if you scouted, there was a reason.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And we're not going to say it. There was a reason you went into scouting. Okay.
Yeah. Are you saying that they couldn't coach?
Brian and I stayed in coaching. I don't know what their reason is, but we stayed there. You know, so to me, it's bringing those guys like that. I tell you who's done an unbelievable job is Buffalo. Buffalo, there's one player left from when I was there 4 years ago with the Bills. One player, Jerry Hughes.
You weren't too happy leaving Buffalo. You know, you was upset with kind of how you left there. But they have done a great job rebuilding that roster.
They've done an amazing job. But it starts with that. Here's what they did. Mm-hmm. They cleared the whole building out.
Yeah.
Right.
They got rid of every single scout, team doctors, this, that, whatever. So it wasn't just the coach that needed to be fired, obviously, but it was they needed to bring new life in there. Mm-hmm. And they've had the same life in the equipment room and everything else for 30 years. And those guys might have been the greatest ever, but sometimes you need a change.
Absolutely.
Right. Because I was here before you. I'll be here after you. That mentality is going to get you beat every time. I remember when we took over in San Francisco, Bill Walsh fired everybody in the building, brought most of them back, but he wanted to make the point to them, now I'm the reason you're here. Okay. Right. It wasn't just because you were here before. Understand that I'm the reason you're back in this building. So you better appreciate that.
Oh. Yeah, God, I wish I would have known that lesson. Man. Thanks, Brian.
I know. It's one of the uses. I left that out of the notebook.
Hey, Coach Brian, thank you for joining us on this week's show, man. We got to have you back. We're going to bring you back. And that'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access to Locker Room. For more insight with the Locker Room Point of View, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.
You go into your shower feeling tired. But as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX this Friday and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.